in 100 years.
That shit house,
if you think we'll be insightful, clever, or just well researched. We're here to say that's not the case. We'll just go out and wing it. We are two guys, one cup.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, One Cup Summer Edition. My name is Charlie Clawson and this is a series called My Club. And this week we have a very special guest, actor and writer and producer, Ian Meadows. He's a mad West Coast Eagles supporter, and it was very interesting talking to Ian because I can't think of another team in the league that has changed so much in my estimation. I used to hate the Eagles, but in the last 10 years or so, I've found myself with a lot of affection. So I was hoping Ian could shed some light on that. So let's get to it, ladies and gentlemen, Ian Meadows. Ian, thank you so much for doing the show.
Charlie, it's a pleasure.
It's funny, if you'd asked me, like, I don't know, 15 years ago, would I enjoy talking to a West Coast Eagles supporter about football? I probably would have said no, but as I've discussed with you off air, I think that the Eagles have had a real kind of transformation of image in the last 10 years. Would you agree?
Yeah, and I'm happy to to turn your opinion around, mate.
Well, it's not you personally,
an ambassador. No, I'll take it on board. I know I'm a really great example of what can be achieved by a West Coast supporter if you really just put the hard work in and and stop behaving the way that the Eagles behaved in like the mid 2000s, and was an interesting time for the Eagles.
Well, it's interesting when I talked to Scott Dooley, who's a Collingwood supporter. I was interested to know, like, knowing Scott's personality and knowing your personality, to support a team that is kind of such a monolith, like such a big team that is not like a bully of the AFL, but you are a big powerhouse team. But I know that, you know, you're someone who's very empathetic. You know, you like to sort of see both sides. Has that been hard for you to kind of reconcile, sort of like barracking for such a...
Back then, there was just sort of the one side that we were just kind of bad. And then it turns out probably kind of cheating in the end. You just had to embrace the bad boy image. You know, once half the team got, you know, arrested for crashing their car and leaving it somewhere along the Kwinana Freeway every other week, you know, you kind of just had to take on board the fact that that's who we were. That's who we were, and we ran with it.
So, from someone from WA, like, I'm really interested to know what it's like to barrack for a team in like a two horse town or even a one horse town. Like, was it a case of in the mid 2000s they just had carte blanche, like that they were untouchable?
I reckon it was. Like, I actually, when I was at uni, like, I was mad for it growing up. Like, they came into the competition when I was about 3 years old. So it was just my whole life. I was like, well, this team came to existence, obviously, because I needed an AFL team.
Yeah, that's
clearly
right.
And so this is what they've created.
There's a child who needs an AFL team.
Yeah, quick, stat. let's get Glenn Denning onto this. And then, you know, they were winning premierships by the time I was 9 years old. That was prime, like, premiership winning time. And then, yeah, it's so obsessive over there that it became, it's just sort of all encompassing. It's like there's basically like 6-page wraparound of the West Australian every weekend. It's like a grand final spread, but just for the Eagles. This is before, obviously, the Dockers came in. Mm. So it was mad then. And then once the Dockers were in, it was just across the board kind of coverage. And these guys just were, you know, they were big time personalities.
Rock and roll
stars.
Yeah,
exactly. They like, these were the guys. And then, you know, when you add in like Ben Cousins kind of pedigree into that, like AFL royalty plus the looks, plus the
media savvy.
Yeah, exactly. It just went nuts. And so I actually, weirdly, during that time, kind of early 2000s, I couldn't kind of deal with it. Like,
right.
it was just too much. So I actually didn't.
While you were still living in.
While I was still over there.
Yeah.
It was really only when I came over to Sydney that I got back into it. There was a bit of oxygen and I was sort of the weird one who followed AFL, which luckily coincided with that. Well, unluckily in 2005 when, you know, the 2005, 2006, when we were like, us and
the
Sydney,
rivalries, yeah.
Yeah, and I think played 6 games of like still like the record lowest margins
less than a goal or something, right?
Yeah, it was like 13 points over 6 games.
Yeah.
And then we played those prelims and the grand final was like, and just switched around those 2 years. So it kind of coincided me like getting back into the AFL and the Eagles over that time was coincided well with that. But you know, as we found out in the years subsequent, there were some issues.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to, you know, your birth.
Please.
Your birth and the birth of the Eagles.
It was a cloudy day.
No, I'm interested. I'm always interested talking to people about how, you know, they chose their team. Was it a family thing? Were you allowed to individually choose? Do your siblings barrack for a different team?
My sister is, as you will, your listeners may note, is Nerilee Meadows, who's a prominent AFL journalist. And she has been the Dockers since they came into the competition.
Was she Eagles prior to that?
She was, but she was pretty... So she was born in 85. So she was, again, she was like prime kind of... it's just propaganda. She succumbed to the propaganda. You know, there was purple everywhere. She loves purple.
Yep.
She was quickly, you know, in love with, you know, there was Tony Modra came along at the right time.
Yeah.
So she's Fremantle. My dad was a really good footy player. And he didn't sort of play at any... He just sort of played in local competitions. He lived down the wheat belt. He's sort of farming family, but was a really good sort of wingman. And he grew up kind of screaming at the TV. He was the most placid man, still is the most placid man. The most he famously the most he's ever berated me and my friends or my siblings was at 3 a.m. we're like, you know, jumping in the pool and being idiots, and he comes out and he says, "Come on guys, knock it off."
That's the most angry he gets.
That's the most angry he ever got, except when he's watching AFL, the way he tears down, the way he'll scream, you know, at I'm trying to think of like the players that most got his go, but yeah, the way he would sort of, you know, go off at these players was something like
Carl Langdon
for Langdon popped a few.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were a pretty solid team.
I was trying to think, like, there aren't many whipping boys from that 90s team, because, again, they were a real powerhouse,
yeah,
you know?
That's right. And they were all real hard workers. Like, between the material, Lamb, Mainwaring, yeah, Kemp, like, such workmanlike players. Mm. Worsfold, all the guys that Dad kind of loved. So I think it was like that got us all on board, those kind of players.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I got into it, and my uncles were massive Subiaco waffle fans.
Right.
And so Subiaco had run through the team, and I think because, you know, the Eagles went and played at Subiaco and that was their home base, and they kind of...
Yeah, there's enough links.
Yeah, I think those links kind of caused the family to jump on board. But I think it was just Australia, WA wide, like most people, if they didn't have their set team, like,
yeah,
they were just ready to jump on that.
Well, my brother-in-law and my nephew, who are both live in Perth, are hardcore Eagles supporters, and they say a similar thing, which is like, well, it was more like a state side initially.
Yeah.
You know, and there was this kind of sense. I mean, it's not I'm not sure if it's a chip on their shoulder, but there is this sense of pride in being a Western Australian and seeing for so many years, like, the top end Western Australian talent go and play for Victorian sides. And the only kind of bragging rights you get would be in the state of origin. But as that became less and less of a thing, and, you know, the national competition became more prominent, then it makes sense that you would be like, well, yeah, you know, yeah, I'm from WA, so this is my team. Fremantle has to go and stuff the whole thing up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's ruined it for everyone. Exactly. Yeah, I think too, because they had the... because they got most of their players from the waffle. It was like, you know, all those arguments they must have had about, well, our waffle sided, you know, all those kind of theoretical arguments. Yeah. You haven't stayed
the best
origin,
GFL take on the, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, they had the Cables and the Glendennings and stuff, but they finally had a chance, I think, to go, yeah, well, we'll make finals in our first couple of years and win a premiership within 5 years.
And that's pretty incredible. Like, when you think about it, especially if you look at the new expansion clubs like Gold Coast or, you know, GWS, I mean, even Port Adelaide, it took them about 10 years.
Yeah.
It took them 10 years, but they haven't done it since. But the Eagles have won, what, four flags?
Yeah, four flags.
In 20-something years, which is...
Yeah. 34, which, I mean, of course, I'm
34 years?
They've been in the competition. I'm 37 now.
Of course, yeah.
Because
they're 34.
37, so
I just lost an entire decade of my life. That's terrifying.
Yeah, in that second.
But that's pretty impressive. Like, even with the Swans, you sort of say, well, they had that sort of South Melbourne tradition to build a team from scratch. Adelaide have won two.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, Fremantle still.
Yeah.
And to quite get there.
And I think it's too, it's just the players that you've had, because Titus O'Reilly, when he did this show talking about Melbourne, and we sort of talked about how Melbourne has been thereabouts before their kind of dark days of the last 10 years. You know, they played finals and they played grand finals. But Titus is saying, If you look at those finals teams, they didn't really have any superstars like David Neitz, Adam Uze. They're okay. They're good players, but they're not superstars. Whereas I can't really think of a generation of Eagles teams that haven't had at least, a couple of superstars, absolute standouts.
Yeah, that's right. Like a Matera or Cousins or Judd or some at the same time. They've been pretty savvy recruiting. I mean, in those early days, I guess there were different recruiting kind of
zones or
something. Zones and stuff. So they just got their pick of the bunch with the waffle, which...
Well, that's always the rumor about the Eagles, isn't it? Is that they find some guy out in a bush league or something and they'll just bury him. They'll just hide him, put him in a compound somewhere.
There's a decent front line there. As you say, they were called the West Coast Eagles for a reason. How much West Coast is there? 6,000 kilometers. Poor Fitzroy and Carlton get about 12 square k's
to share.
you're screwed. But we got there's a lot of.
I mean, it's amazing when a player like a Buddy Franklin goes to an Eastern State team, isn't it? Seriously, how could you let him go?
Yeah, I know.
He's too big to hide anywhere. He's 6 foot seven.
Yeah,
can run 100 meters in 10 seconds.
That's it. That's why we put the hard border in now. This has all just been. That's what it is. It's all a hoax just to get. Stop, guys. You can go over, but you'll never come back. So, yeah.
So when you were a kid, who was the first player that really captured your imagination? Did you have a number on your back or?
Well, I wanted to be Peter Matera, but I was just never really fast or
skillful
enough, really. Yeah,
I'll bald say, enough.
Thanks.
The baldness is that I'm working on, but
that's right. Workmanlike was my just one percenters was my kind of goal.
You're talking to a dour left foot halfback flanker, big on heart, not on the skills.
Line. Yeah, exactly. Coach's awards.
Yeah,
coach's
GOP. Awards,
right? Stick around at training afterwards, but never
role
quite.
Player.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Yeah, utility. So there were the materials. But of the team, I'm trying to think. Craig Turley was the guy who the flowing locks.
He looked like a surfer. I mean, that's the great thing about the Eagles too is whenever I think of the Eagles, I always think of preseason comp and they are always so bloody tanned. They are the most tanned.
That's right.
Maybe the Gold Coast now, but, historically it's always been the Eagles. They always come back from, preseason looking so tanned and so blonde.
That's it. That must have. I think that was, maybe that was part of their problem. The Chad Fletchers and
It is an issue though, isn't it? With players sneaking off to go surfing and stuff. That seems to be a distinctly Western Australian issue.
Right. Apart from the risk of melanoma.
And COVID now.
That's right.
Wasn't Nat Fyfe off surfing when he should have been in lockdown?
Is that
or
right? Yeah. I mean, if you're gonna skip quarantine, I guess then
that's one thing.
And I think this was part of my problem. I just never had the surfing. I just never had the skin tone.
Right. You look.
I had the worst.
Much more like a Melbourne
skin.
Footballer.
Yeah. That's right, me and Dean Kempton, just skinny, pasty guys who had to, make their way. McKenna, maybe. McKenna was next level paleness.
Yeah.
But he was, again, just hard-nosed.
And so were you drilled as a young kid to hate Victorian clubs or to have a chip on your shoulder?
No, weirdly. I mean, actually, I didn't start playing until I was 14 because in the town I grew up in, there was a big kind of Italian and Polish communities. And so soccer was huge. And my mum came out from England when she was 10 years old. And so my uncles, who were big influencers and sporting influencers on me, were all massive Liverpool fans.
Right.
And so they got into AFL or the VFL, but they were massive Carlton fans. Mm. So they were, Carlton was always, it was like they big Subiaco, but then Carlton. So they hated the Eagles. They've always hated the Eagles and just loved Carlton. So we also, that was the big rivalry in the family. It was always sort of the Silvanis and Kernahans and stuff, were pitted against the Eagles. And so whenever they played, that was the big family rivalry. So I actually played soccer, but I was a goalkeeper. And so the transition was a little easy because all my mates were playing, except for the one friend, were playing AFL, and they were always come play AFL. And so I gave it a go one day and I was just in love with it. I'm it was because the thing I like about goalkeeping was when you got that opportunity to run out at people or throw it, jump into a pack. But the opportunity to sort of just
throw yourself recklessly into people or tackle or, you know, do whatever you were doing as a 14-year-old. Boy in a small country town was like, that was just like heaven. So I was sort of hooked at that point. But yeah, it was all soccer and hockey before that. Mm. But then I was in. I was sort of mad AFL from then on. Yeah.
And so do you think, like, culturally in terms of supporters, there is a difference between the different kind of states, like Victoria versus South Australia versus WA versus
Sydney?
Yeah, we're
so annoying. Like, I really see how annoying we are now. Like, that one itis of, like, having the privilege of having, a you know, 60,000 seats all filled by your supporters.
Yeah.
It's just unnatural. It's just
it's a bubble.
Strange. It's a real bubble.
You guys pioneered the bubble before there was a bubble.
Yeah, yeah. Which is, I think, where the kind of like the weird sort of the controversies around the booing and then that kind of stuff has come from. I just think we don't quite realize what it is. We don't realize there are other supporters in Australia. You know, you go to a game here, it's great. You kind of get that match of sides, and obviously some sides have.
It's an interesting point you bring up. I mean, we should just rip the Band-Aid off and talk about the Adam Goods things, because, you know, that's where the booing started, was that game, against the Eagles. And again, like, talking to my Perth friends, Eagles supporters, a lot of them, their defense was that thing of, no, we're not booing him because he's Aboriginal. We're booing him because we boo everyone. And I think that legitimately some people were doing that. Mm. What we have come to see now and realize is that, yeah, but that booing was giving cover to genuine racism. You know, if there's anything that's come out of those two great documentaries about Adam Goods, that's what was happening. But, I think that there is an argument to be made that, they're an entirely partisan crowd. I've gone to games at Subiaco, and I've got to admit, the area I was sitting in, they're very nice to me, but it was incredibly condescending. It was when the Saints finished bottom of the ladder and we were absolutely no threat. But as someone who grew up in going to the suburban grounds in Melbourne, like Victoria Park and Windy Hill and Western Oval and stuff, it's very reminiscent of that enemy territory feeling when you go in, like that kind of feeling where you are outnumbered like 5-1,
Or 60,000-1 or whatever. Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be a huge advantage. Like,
oh, massive. And I think they're the team that's won, has the best winning at home percentage.
Right.
Not just, I think this is right, not just kind of over the course of their career, but if you look at it in averages, if you break it down over the course of the entire sort of AFL history, I think theirs is the highest.
Right.
Which, yeah, makes sense with a mixture of that list and that travel. Like, I can't,
I mean, that's a thing. It's not really an advantage when you take into account that, sure, so they get 11 games or whatever it is at home, but then there's 11 games on the road.
That's right, where they do the reverse.
And I don't know about you, but I always find that trip back from WA to be a killer. That's the hard one. So the games where they're playing away, that's the hard ones. Like, they're facing that weird sort of jet laggy type feeling.
And I think it's those teams that have, like, the teams that have won flags, even if they haven't, there's been teams in other years, I think, that have been kind of on paper better or have had less injuries or whatever. But it feels like those teams that kind of at some point in the season get a real confidence boost. You know, like in 2018, I think there was that game against the Pies at the MCG where they gunned it and won by sort of 30 points or whatever. And I think those big confidence boost wins, they kind of go, oh, we can win, you know, we won't believe the hype, we can win here. Like, it's not impossible that do it. Whereas, you know, they've had those other years of terrible records at the G, they haven't overcome.
Yeah, that was a criticism the last few years, wasn't it? Is that the Eagles can't travel, or one of my favorite footy cliches, flat track bullies, downhill skiers.
I still don't quite know like what it means, but I know that it means you beat teams below you, right? Like,
Well, flat track is you look good as long as you're not facing opposition. So you're not running uphill. You're running on a flat track.
Yeah. I think I've used the term and gone, hey, I'm not quite sure I understand the metaphor, but I'll use it anyway.
Downhill skiers, flat track bullies, it's all the same thing. Yeah, but I don't reckon I don't think that's correct about the Eagles. I think that it's such a huge advantage. Like, it's not like that they lean on that for all their victories. And also, when you look at all the other interstate teams that have home games that don't have the record of the Eagles, I think it is something, you know, they use their advantage well rather than just relying on it to get wins.
Yeah, and there must be something, speaking as someone who's never played professional football or football in front of 60,000 screaming fans, but there must be something just in the psychology of it, just in the history of knowing that that's kind of your pedigree and that's what happens. there has to be something about the confidence you take into a game, kind of just playing with, well, this is what we're supposed to do. So I guess we'll...
Well, it's like the Pies have that reputation of backs against a wall. Like the Pies, you can always, you know, rely on them to win when they've been smashed in the media all week. Their best players are out, guaranteeing Collingwood will win. I think you could apply that to the Eagles a little bit, which is they just don't lose at home. You know, it's shocking. In fact, they so rarely lose at home, or specifically the Saints have so rarely beaten the Eagles in WA. Like I can remember all the victories. I can like...
Yeah, it was a windy day.
Individually yeah, name right, them. Like there was one game in particular, I think it was Rob Harvey's 350th, or it was one some extraordinary kind of milestone game. And, you know, we had players out and injured, and it was one of those games where we shouldn't have won and somehow we did. And I remember watching that game and watching the players and everyone celebrating like we'd
like
won
grand final.
A final. Yeah. Because I guess it is that thing of like just facing that the cauldron of that rabid West Coast fan base.
Oh, for sure.
And I mean, just... how amazing is that footage of Mickey O'Loughlin in one of those elimination finals where he kicks the winning goal and he runs along the Eagles cheer squad?
I mean, that's the thing. When you know you got the game over there, wouldn't you just... You just love it because you're copying it. I mean, obviously, you'd be copying it any, you know, the oval, in, you know, track in the country. You're the opposition team, but when you've got that many people who can berate you without any threat of recrimination, you know. And going back to what you were saying, I think that was it with the good thing. I think it was that bubble there that where there were some people who kind of got on board and they didn't think about what the context was and what the history was with Goods, which those documentaries address so well. And then there were those who were just racist, whether they were
conscious
it or
of
not.
It.
There's absolutely that. And it gave them that excuse and it gave them that kind of cover to be able to do that. But I think the big problem I had and the arguments I had with people back there was once that context was kind of spoken about, you had no leg to stand on. But once it was broken down, you had to realize that you were either doing this that was playing into this kind of... the racist treatment of Goods, who, you know, when he won that Australian of the Year, he gave the most kind of reasonable speech he could ever have given. So kind of
eloquent and well argued. Yeah.
Yeah. And so generous. It was so generous because he had every right to kind of just go full scale attack and refuse the award. So for people then to kind of keep their kind of heads in the sand and keep, you know, maintaining it's that belligerence.
I was going to say,
instead of just listening, it's the defensiveness,
stubborn. It's like won't be told what to do. And I do think there is a large portion of footy fans, not just Eagles fans, who believe that once they pay their money, they get to say whatever they want. And look, I'm a big believer in, like your dad, you know, football's a great outlet, but there's a line, you know. And I think that in any other workplace, it would not be acceptable. You can't go into McDonald's and start like racially vilifying the person behind the counter. You know, you'll be asked to leave. And I think that there, like you said, he, first of all, that Australian of the Year award thing, it's not like he nominated himself. He was given that award.
Yeah.
And I think that he felt a duty to speak on behalf of, you know, the people that he represents. And I agree. He did it the most eloquent way. I think the issue is the way that was cut up. And then the sound bites that were released, if you take small chunks of that, it can sound inflammatory or ungrateful or whatever, however the media wanted to manipulate it. But I think by then the damage was already done. You know, I mean, the AFL have admitted, they've come out and they said we should have done more to protect him. And, you know, it's actually one of the great shames of our game, I think, is the way we exited Adam Goods.
Absolutely.
Because the thing is too, like, of all the players who are clean skins, like of all the players who have done horrendous things, who have media careers and are still like, you know, vaunted in the media and stuff, it's like this guy was a dual Brownlow medalist who was, you know, a pillar of the community. You never read about him in the paper doing the wrong thing, and yet somehow there is a percentage of the population who are clinging to this idea that he plays for free kicks, or that, you know, he, you know, harassed a 10-year-old girl or whatever the bullshit kind of narrative is. And it's just like, it's just...
I mean, there are current commentators, you know, who've done horrendous things. And whilst, of course, you know, I'm not saying people shouldn't get second chances. You're absolutely right. For a two-time Brownlow winner who had that, you know, such a kind of... who was so good and who was such a great story. He was such a great story of the AFL.
He's such a clean skin.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're going to take down a clean skin, then what other, then what other chance does like another player have?
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's get back to the Eagles. I am really fascinated, though, by this kind of evolution of the Eagles. Because like I said, you know, they were the evil, from my perspective, they were the evil empire from the West. You know, won two flags without earning it. Like, got into the competition.
I think you moved Darth Vader in that. Like, is Malthouse, was Malthouse Darth, you know, who...
Well, that's a good... Let's talk about Mick Malthouse. What were your feelings on Mick Malthouse when he was a coach?
Oh, he could do no wrong.
Right.
I mean, as you would imagine of a coach that comes in...
Wins
you know,
two flags.
A year later, wins the first flag, the quickest... flag of any, you know, new club. It's like 4 years after five years after we'd entered the comp.
Mm.
And then, you know, another one a year later after like 91 and 93 coming so close as well. So he could kind of do no wrong. And then when he left, I mean, you don't leave.
It's like the mafia.
Leave the family. Yeah. Everyone as a
and
kid,
especially when you leave for Collingwood too, like of all the teams to go for.
Yeah.
So they had that impression of being like this, you know, insanely successful team from the very, very beginning. Then came like the 2000s era, the Ben Cousins, Chris Judd. And before we knew all the kind of the backstory of what was going on, like they were such an exciting team. Like if you just take it purely on the football, I was watching, I can't remember, it was one of the Fox Footy highlights packages and it was a game from 2004. And it's like, you look at that midfield.
Oh, it's
just phenomenal. Like Cox, Kerr, Cousins, Judd.
Yeah.
Like, was that just the salad days for you?
Throwing some party drugs in that is an exciting mix. No, it was, crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Just spoilt for midfielders.
Yeah, when Daniel Kerr is your sort of third string, you know. Yeah. And then a bit of Banfield at the end of it. And it was nuts. And like you said, and Fletcher and those guys who would be the kind of like franchise player in any other kind of year in any other team. It was crazy. And everyone just sort of took it for granted as well, I think. But I mean, I kind of imagine, it would be so interesting to know what like the team would have been without the kind of hard living or, you know. If they had
cracked down more on the partying and stuff.
Yeah, whether they would have been worse or better. I don't know. It would have, I imagine, better.
Well, the interesting thing, have you ever read Ben Cousins' autobiography?
I haven't.
The interesting thing about that is, I mean, clearly whatever his mental issues are or his addiction issues, it has a very circular nature to it because what he would talk about is, and he swears that he would never take, you know, performance enhancing drugs or drugs on game day, no amphetamines. But his rationale was, if I have a really good game, I'm going to reward myself, with a bag on Saturday night. And then he would wake up on Sunday or even Monday feeling like shit. And so in order to punish himself, he's like, well, you're running 20 extra laps. You got to get 30 possessions next week. And so he would train really hard during the week, not touch anything, dominate the following weekend, and then reward himself, you know, with another night out. And so for about a 5 or 6 year period, it was actually a great driver of performance because he had this reward at the end of it, you know. He would go out. He would get 30 possessions, he would party, and then he would, like, you know, punish himself on the track. And so I think for a period of time, you know, that can drive you towards success. But then obviously everything fell apart.
Yeah.
But who knows? Like, who knows? I don't think he was the only cog. I mean, he was a phenomenal player, though. Like, he basically invented gut running, right? Like that idea of just kind of like bursting out of packs and running all day and had great skills and everything like that. But like you said, I mean, Chris Judd was in that team as well. Yeah. I'll never forget 2005 Grand Final was my first time seeing Chris Judd live.
Oh, yeah.
And I sort of had one of those feelings like when you see Michael Jordan play for the first time where you're like, holy shit, this guy's playing a completely different game. I'd just never seen that combination of physical attributes put together like that, like the explosive speed, the skill. He was a bit taller than your average kind of midfielder.
Yeah.
Not tall by today's standards, but you know, what was he, 6'2", 6'3"?
Yeah.
He just had that sort of, he's a prototypical kind of like big-bodied midfielder, but I just had never seen a guy get the ball in congestion and then just accelerate. Like kind of what Patrick Dangerfield does every week now. Well, but
those first 5 to 10 metres.
But you couldn't touch him.
No.
Like that was the thing, is it didn't matter. He could be inside or outside. Well, he'd start inside and then get outside.
Yeah.
Like if you had two of him.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there were two of him.
Yeah, it felt like
the laws of physics. He was an in and under player and an outside player for himself. Yeah, I mean, I remember my dad, when they first picked him, I'm going to throw my old man in here. Great judge of players, but he did... Yeah, he did. He did say that when the Eagles picked up Jadie, he was like, "Oh, those shoulders, they're those shoulders yeah, that pop out yeah, any day."
Because your dad's
like,
a doctor, right?
Yeah, yeah, he was like, "This is a terrible pickup." You know, he looks fine, but those shoulders are not going to last the distance.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I think it was like Hawks took Hodge at one, Saints took Luke Ball at two, and then right. Judd at three. So I'm sure Judd the St Kilda recruiters were just like, that's probably spoke to your dad. And that's a fairly legitimate criticism because his whole junior career,
he was strapped up. By the time he was actually, Yeah, it was.
Well, I'm just glad out of that three, St Kilda picked the best, longest servant, most decorated.
Good player.
We ran him into the ground, and then he got the dreaded osteitis pubis.
It's the lame leg of equivalent, isn't it? Yeah. Horses. It's just just put them out to pasture, and yeah, don't know where it is or what it is, but it sounds bad and it sounds painful and you'll never overcome it.
So when you have a player like Chris Judd who then nominates to leave, like was there always a feeling when he was there that, you know, you... Because I know with Adelaide supporters, there was always a feeling that danger's going to go. You know, he's playing for us and he's a professional and you'd never doubt his endeavour. But
I just think we're so arrogant as West Coast supporters. We're like, why would you leave us? We're awesome. We're that guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the best.
So you didn't get a sense.
I didn't. I don't think I was as conscious of the time of what it was to kind of leave your state and be playing elsewhere. I think I'd always lived in WA up until about those sort of 2005, 2006. Yeah, I moved away from Western Australia in 2005, so at the height of his, success, but also at the height of him probably being pissed off with the rest of the team for doing what they were doing. So I don't think I was that conscious of it. I'd be really interested to know what would have happened had things not gone down like they had. Like with that list, if they'd all stayed healthy. I mean, it's such what a tragedy, really. Like so many of those.
Yeah, it could have been multiple flags.
Yeah. I mean, I think they should, instead of talking about taking them office, I think, it was such a handicap. I mean, if I did any of those things that Cousins did, I would be sore and vomiting and just in bed for weeks.
That's hardly a lesson for kids, is it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Kids, as long as you go out and take mad party drugs and hang out with bikies, as long as you get up the next day and run 40Ks,
you'll be fine. And
punish yourself. Yeah.
Well, it's funny too, because you think about Woosha at that time as well, and it's like, so he was overseeing, that list, and who knows how complicit he was or what he was aware of what was going on at the time. But then in retrospect, when he gets brought into the Bombers, and you're like, I mean, is this by design? And he's also a pharmacist. Is that why you're getting him in? Because he's got when it comes to supplements and different chemicals.
Pharmacist. That's right, it's like a Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I'll leave the casting of any aspersions to others who know more than me. But it reminds me of the like Lehman as well with the Aussie cricket team and the Sandpaper Gate stuff. It's just like it's an interesting position to be in as a coach.
I think every footy club turns a blind eye to stuff, or at least they did. I think Malthouse came out once and. I can't remember what it was, but there was some incidents where some Pies players had done the wrong thing.
Of course you can't remember. There's something every 2 weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
Did they? Yeah.
And they got a fine, but they weren't suspended or anything. And Mick Malthouse very plainly came out and said, well, we're not going to suspend them. He's our best player or something like that. And the media was up in arms. And I'm like, I think it's kind of refreshing to hear, because that is the truth of the matter, is that, that I think most clubs would, they'll do whatever they can to protect their players and whatever they think, and maybe to play devil's advocate, maybe the Eagles administration thought that what was going on was no worse than when they played footy, they're just going out and getting on the beers. Like they may not have had an awareness of what was going on.
Yeah, for sure. It was that, like, it felt like the real intersection of when we were, when we were growing up, it was very much that, like, the movement from sort of amateur to pro stuff. We grew up with those, like, the myths of David Boone flying to, that Ashes tour and sinking 40 cans on the way over, like that. But then they were starting to kind of make the money and everything was starting to go pro. And again, like the years of, Jordan and sports going.
Celebrity.
From,
and
going into this next realm from, Dougie Walters smoking at the crease to then, and similarly, like in the AFL, I think, some of those stories from the 80s and 90s, when you kind of just getting into the national line, the sorts of things those guys would do. So I guess moving through the early 2000s when you've grown up, or you those younger players,
yeah,
justified, but Cousins as a rookie, like I can't imagine the things, you know, that those older guys would have been doing or that he would have seen. And then to then move into that next level of money, fame, yeah,
exactly,
you know, opportunity.
Free drink cards.
Yeah, exactly. Going out to the you know, the...
I was up on the Gold Coast a couple of weeks ago and I was like, why is it so hard for the Gold Coast to maintain any kind of professional sports team? I'm like, it's got beaches, you got nightclubs,
exactly,
babes, it's like, yeah, bikers. It feels like this has everything a young, rich athlete would want.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Perth is like Gold Coast without meter maids or something, like, you know, much, you know, smaller buildings. It's I think it's got that vibe. It's like you're just away from... You know, everyone says the most isolated, you know, capital, yeah, city in the world. I think there's that real bubble vibe. And then, yeah, they're like the kind of the levels of fame of those guys was just nuts.
So you've hit on it a couple of times. Something I'm always interested in when I'm talking to people on this show is about the culture of a club. I find the culture to be such a kind of like vague description. And something that I don't understand, because like surely as team lists change and administrations change, like the culture of your club changes, but there does seem to be something in the fabric of a club. So what is the culture of West Coast in your mind?
Well, it's interesting because I haven't been, so I was there, like I was a sort of playing, I played a few games of Subiaco Colts and then played a bit for sort of Wembley and stuff during those years. So it's kind of sort of in and around it. And everyone had this story. Like everyone in Perth was like 1 degree from, you know, they're like, I was there the night. It was like Woodstock. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And the night that so-and-so crashed their car or did this with a bikey or whatever. Everyone had this story.
We're talking about Michael Gardner specifically.
Name no names, but Schmeichel Schmarden. and there were, yeah, there was just a story for every occasion. It was, yeah, it was the anecdotes were sort of flying thick and far. So I was sort of, you know, like on the periphery of the periphery. But now I've been in Sydney and around for the last 15 years. And so I only sort of see it from afar.
Mm.
But it was pretty, it's pretty amazing. It does feel, just as an outsider, pretty amazing, the kind of transition from that era into the kind of Nick Natanui era.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say that he seems to epitomize the new Eagles, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Totally likable.
Yeah.
Great to watch.
Yeah.
Humble. Yeah. Like there is this strange, I mean, I haven't seen Reputation Rehab on the ABC yet,
all right,
but I'd be interested if they could get the entire Eagles organization.
There are some reputations that cannot be.
No, but I think they have. I think that's the amazing thing is that, like, you know, when you guys beat the Pies in 2018, I doubt there would be, like, if that had happened 10 years earlier, there'd be no Victorian who would be happy to see that. I mean, it's Collingwood, so there's always going to be a portion of Victorians.
Yeah.
But I think that, I mean, A, what a win. Like, what a victory. I mean, we I need
Should
to
we just
ask.
Stop and play? Let's just play. Let's stop playing now.
I need to ask. So have you been there for any of the flags? Like in person?
No. The only grand finals I've been to were courtesy of my sister. The first one was the Fremantle final against Hawthorn, and as a guest of her as a Freo supporter. And then the Bulldogs, which was pretty great. That was a great flag. Sorry, I know.
No, that's all right.
Yeah. But that was a beauty. But I've never been to the Eagles. I did have the chance of being at 2018.
Mm.
But and the only thing that would ever supersede, you know, that probably experience is the birth of a child.
Yeah.
And so we were, my son Jamison was, he was due to be born any minute. So I thought it would not be wise to fly down just in case.
How's that conversation going?
Turned out I was wrong. Ash agrees. Ash was watching it with me, my partner. And she's like, well, you really should have gone. I would have been fine. Like,
oh, no.
This is... With 30 points down, I'm like, okay, maybe it was a good decision. And then, you know. But you know the positive thing about that day? I had a bunch of friends around who were, you know, had passing interest in the AFL, but I would like to think are quite fond of me as a friend. I really felt like I could claim the win as my own. I mean, there is a video that Ash took at the moment. We kind of, you know, the siren blows and that I'm celebrating like I am Dom Sheed. Yeah. Oh, in that moment, you know, je suis dumb sheet. we are all dumb sheet as West Australians.
I mean, I imagine there must be some kind of like, although you'd love to be there, I know how anxious I get. And so at least you had that separation. And so maybe the high isn't as high as it could have been if you're at the ground, but also the tension wouldn't have been as tense, I imagine. Or am I wrong?
I don't know what it is.
I mean, I couldn't have had friends around, I don't think.
Yeah, I knew.
And the fact that they're not really AFL fans, I would shit me no end.
I think because they you know, weren't
that. But were they trying to talk to you and stuff during the game?
Oh, no, they knew not. I said to them, I won't be rude. I just won't hear you. Like, I'm that dude who just, if the football's on, like, you know, Ash and I have constant conversations about it. Like, we'll be in a really serious conversation and they'll just, I don't know what it is in our brains, whether it's just an exclusively sort of male thing, but my eyes will flicker over if there is football or something on, like football on particularly. I'll have to admit, I'll look back at her and go, I'm sorry. The train tracks just switched from one to the next. I really apologize. I didn't hear the last 5 seconds. I know it's my failing as a man and human being, but I can't do two things at once. So I said to them, oh, you know, I will just not hear you if this is happening. I mean, you and me have done this before. You know, we watched, I think, the Swans and the Eagles last year, the year before, the year that was 2020. And we'll just occasionally, we'll just, you know, both sort of blip out as we watch the game and don't hear what's been said. So I said, you know, that was what we went into that game knowing, and I wasn't rude. I was just...
And as it got like tense in that last 90 seconds or something?
Everyone was there because I'm quite a reserved person, but then when it gets to that point, I can be a bit like my father. I've tried over the years to stop kicking televisions and things, and I've succeeded in not doing that for a good amount of years, which is not something you want to be you're very proud of after a game's finished.
Yeah.
So now I try and mask those moments, but yeah, I was pretty happy when Flynn Ryan was, you know, took that mark, and then when Dom Sheed was, let's face it, illegally blocked in that pocket, there was a block. We all know it.
Put the whistle away. You got to put the whistle away
in that moment.
You got to.
I mean,
and it's Collingwood.
And just iced it. So the fist bump came out in spades, and I don't think I took off my jersey for, I don't know, maybe a week.
And how many times have you watched the replay?
Only two, actually.
Oh, right.
Only two. There's been, because my son was born a week later, auspiciously. Little Nat Nui Jamison Meadows. I put the word out. Do we call him Liam, Dom, Nick, you know. So he was born a week after. So there have been moments where, you know, I've just put it on late. We usually get a bit of before one of us falls asleep, but it's a great go-to moment. And just the pure... But the thing is, that game is so insane that every time I'm watching, I'm still like, how the... Do we win? Like,
yeah.
No, this must be wrong.
I mean, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because you were only led for the last 90 seconds of the game, right? It's like you were behind the whole game.
I feel
game.
Like, didn't we go up and then they actually made a charge again and then we went up again? You're probably right.
My memory is that you were chasing them all day. Like, they led for the entire game, but... I've only seen it once, so
yeah, and I'm seeing it three times.
But it was that is probably my favorite grand final. The other one that was, I think, is my other favorite of the recent grand finals was the Sydney Hawthorn one of 2012, where
amazing
off one leg, Adam Goods like wins the game. For
them.
But
absolutely.
That as a neutral supporter, just to sort of see, I mean, there is something satisfying about seeing Collingwood lose a grand final. But I think for me, it was the full stop to West Coast's transition to a likable team again. Like, I felt it's weird because you haven't been made to do penance like Essendon are currently doing or Carlton have done for the last 20 years. There was no real overarching sanctions on the club, was there? Like, it was more individual.
Yeah.
Because there was that report that was done, that internal report that was done that said, look, there was clearly some failures on the part of the administration.
Yeah, no.
But I think that if you are going to rehabilitate your image, that's how you do it, which is like you just draft good, like upstanding, reputable players and you get results on the field. Like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they had some dark I mean, it kind of felt like the pennants they had was, I mean, I think Darren Glass was a big, again, not knowing the bloke at all, but he just felt like a really good kind of caretaker.
Steadying influence.
Again, the sort of Tim Payne kind of guy, like just really workmanlike to get you through this period, who actually turned out to be really good and sort of excelled with it. But yeah, there was some dark, I'm trying to remember specifically when they were, like 2008, 2011, like, you know, we sort of dropped down. And then I think we finished, we got our first and only Wooden Spoon 2011, I think.
Right.
And then 2012, we just like had one of the best recoveries from that. And then, and I think it was then I was like, oh, okay, maybe our rebuild will be like, won't be decades. It'll be all right.
Well, you played a grand final 4 years later, was it?
Yeah.
2015.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty amazing to go from bottom to the grand
back
final.
To that, yeah. Yeah. And again, you know, I think that.
In fact, now that we're talking about it, I'm starting to hate the Eagles again.
Oh, no, as you should. Four flags in. I think they're the sort of winningest team in the period of time they've been there. It's one every, like, what is it average? Like one every sort of eight to nine years.
Mm.
It's gross. We should be disliked. And, you know, we did all that work rehabilitating the image and then Gaff just goes and clocks.
I mean, I think that was, it was not a good look, but there was not intention. Like, I think everyone understands. I think
he just felt, you know, as soon as he done, he was like, oh, I didn't realize.
You felt there was like genuine remorse there. I think it's more the off-field stuff that you haven't really heard much of. There's been no, I mean, at least unless the Western Australian, there's been a blackout in Western Australian media, but you're not hearing the same kind of stories coming out. And I do think that there are certain players that encapsulate the culture of a club. I often talk about how, you know, prior to Richmond being the Richmond they are now, I always thought that Matthew Richardson was the perfect epitome of Richmond, you know, because he was brilliant, but he's also hilarious,
could
do something amazing, disastrous. And I do feel that, you know, Nick Nat is a great face of this modern Eagles team, you know, like I think that he, I mean, bizarre year that he had to just be so dominant in the ruck and barely got a Brownlow vote.
Yeah.
Which
yeah,
was
yeah, that's right.
so
yeah,
strange.
It is. But I think he's the kind of guy that wouldn't, he's sort of one of the guys that genuinely doesn't play for that kind of stuff, as opposed to a lot of us that would claim not to. Yeah, he just genuinely seems like that dude, like just sort of funny and easygoing. And, you know, he's written a kid's book that I love reading to my son, that my son loves, that kind of just
transformation.
Like, yeah, from that. Like imagine the kid's books that would have come out of the mid-2005. Yeah, so kids, I was out. Like underbelly for like 4-year-olds. Where his is all about like total inclusion and empathy, you know. So it's the kind of like, it's the list is sort of much more boring, but I'm fine that way.
You know,
winning, but much sort of boring off the field. Across the board, you've got, you know, that group of players. There's not many there that Kennedy. You just.
Oh, I love JJK. Love him. Is there a player that is your all-time favorite from all eras that you've been following? Is there someone who lays at Matera sit above the rest?
Well, that's a really good question.
Yeah, I mean, I think with fandom or footy fandom, you sort of go through phases. Like every time a significant St Kilda player retires, I always swear they'll never get over it. Like, you know, when Nicky Winmar left, I was like, oh God, no, I'll never get over that. Not Nicky. When Plugger left, oh, I'll never get over that. When Rob Harvey retired, oh no.
Yeah.
When Nick Revolt, oh no. But you do, you know.
But I do
feel like, you know, Rob Harvey always will have a special place in my heart because, A, he played in so many games, so many games I watched he was in. I got his jumper and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I think Nick Revolt, just for being like, what an amazing captain. Like he's my modern favorite. Is there someone like that or a couple of players like that for the Eagles?
Oh, I used to love watching Chris Lewis when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Like just what he could, you know, the kinds of things he could do. But, you know, like, again, I think because I quickly realized, you know, when I started playing when I was 14, I was like, oh, the things I'll be good at are not the things that those really brilliant players can do. It is like shepherding, tackling.
1%
is. 1%. The
good ordinary player.
That's it, the coach's award kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so even like Hutchings and stuff, like I just...
You love the guys who are like you.
You kind of like... I appreciate the guys who don't get appreciated, I think, you know, that will do those things. But then I'm going to say that. I mean... Liam Ryan's an instant favourite.
I've talked about this on the regular Two Guys, One Cup most of the year, but it is a regular occurrence for me to just Google the Ryan highlights. Like, for such a relatively new player, he has got an impressive highlight reel. Like, he's so exciting to watch.
But then does those 1%ers as well, which for a small build is kind of...
Well, in that 2018 grand final, one of his 1%ers seemed to be like he took his eyes off the ball, seemed to be in charge.
Look, at that stage, I'm sure put the whistle away. Self-preservation. Yeah. It was just, so Adam Simms was like, look, I foresee you were going to play a big part in the last 90 seconds of this game. Just look after yourself. Yeah, look, that wasn't a highlight. Before that, I had those moments.
Yeah.
He probably heard a call behind him, Charlie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he heard JK.
Coming from a guy who would not have the courage to even step onto a football field and put my body on the line, I'm going to start slings and arrows.
But yeah, you know, like the Banfields and the Kemps and McKenna's and stuff when I was a kid, like just hard nuts, those guys. But, you know, Matera 5 bounces down the wing in that. I think it was the 94 grand final.
Yeah. I mean, that's a thing. You are actually just spoilt for choice when it comes to superstars.
Yeah.
And even like the modern era, like I love the JJK little Frenchman combination. Yeah, like what a great double act. What a Batman and Robin that those two were.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, Phil Matera too, like who was any other era. Like he was sort of in that bridging era, I think, if I'm remembering kind of correctly. But, you know, he was a great... He was a great goal sneak and another guy that just defied sort of size and logic to kick. You know, I think he kicked their most goals for the Eagles a couple of times, which for a little forward pocket is pretty amazing.
Where do you fall on the Jack Darling side of things? Like, I know he's a bit of a whipping boy.
I think he'd be a great person.
Okay.
And this is not I've really liked... There's no player I've vacillated on more than Darling, because for a while I thought he was kind of more interested in doing kind of backflips once he'd fallen over than he was about taking marks. And then I do have burned into my retinas the drop mark in the 2015 grand final. And then I thought he may have done it again in the 2018 grand final, where he kind of spent it before he had it. But we would not have won the 2018 flag without him. Like when JK was injured through that period of time, he stepped up big time.
Yeah.
So I may have made the comment that I'd trade him for a baking tray to a friend in a moment of
weakness,
of desperation. Yeah. But I apologize, Jack. And since then, Darling, you beauty has come out of my mouth many, many times. So I apologize.
The role of second tall is a pretty thankless job. I mean, when you're the guy who's there to sort of take attention away from the star forward or to crash packs or whatever, it can be fairly thankless.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's what Cozzy was at the Saints with Revolt. When Lance Franklin was still at the Hawks, that's what Ruffy was. And then Lance left and then he had the chance. I mean, if JJK, this is his last year, then maybe Jack Darling will get his time to shine.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, and he did in those times.
Yeah, he did have a good run, didn't he?
Was out. And, you know, when they both fire, it's the times where they've both kicked at least a couple must be very rare that we've lost a game.
I think the frustration is when you see a player like that who seems to have all the tools, the size, you know, the skill set can take a grab. It's really frustrating why they don't dominate. But then I think, I don't know anything about tactics. Like, I've been watching football my entire life and I still, like, have no idea, like, what the zone means, or, you know, when they play man on. What do you mean? I don't understand.
Flat track bullet, yeah.
I don't understand any of that stuff, but I imagine there are several tactics that, you know, both offensively and defensively, that mean that Jack Darling is not getting the opportunities that JJK gets.
Yeah. No, and look, I do think a lot of my opinion was purely clouded by... You know, I remember that 2015 grand final. We were just starting a little pushback. You know, we'd been dominated. Hodge was just playing out of his mind. And then, you know, we kicked a goal or two just to kind of get back in it. And then he just dropped this chest mark. And a lot of my, you know, like my aspersions on him may have come from that moment, which is probably quite unfair.
Just like that's the thing about the intense high-pressure moment in a grand final.
Yeah. But that's what's so insane about sport, isn't it? Just the idea that you could do something you don't choose to do. It just happens in that moment because of
any other occupation.
That's right.
A fraction of a second.
The amount of equivalent, you know, chest mark drops I've done in my life, but because no one gives a shit, will never ever be known or commented on. But I guess that's, you know, the trade-off for like winning flags and then...
Yeah, and that's also just like the... you know, that is what fandom is like it means something because you choose to mean something. Like maybe, you know, maybe you're the only person who thinks that way about yeah. that moment. Maybe Jack's even shaken that moment off and you're the one who's obsessing yeah. over it. You know what
well,
I mean?
I reckon he has a few nightmares.
So let's talk about what is, do you have a single highlight? Like, what's your greatest memory associated with the Eagle? Was it a game you're at? Was it a win? Well,
I mean, look, that 2018, I mean, it's the most recent kind of highlight, but it's hard to beat that, you know, that passage of play from McGovern. I mean, McGovern, let's talk about McGovern, you know, in terms of favourite players. The guy looks like he just stepped out of a pub.
Pure country footballer.
You know what I mean? In Caliberran, you know, and, yeah. and hasn't played for the last 10 years. Like, oh, yeah, I'll throw the boots on and yeah. comes out and, you know, just does what he does. He's just incredible and a kind of inspiration to you know... guys who don't look
unfit
every year. I'm sure he's not. But.
Well, he's the last of that. Like in an era of ultra professional athletes, he feels like he's that last of that kind of old school footballer. Like, what do they say? Footy smarts, you know, not necessarily the greatest athlete, but is a very clever footballer and tough too.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of an underrated stat on him is how durable he is, plays through injury.
The kind of injuries he's played with, I'm sure, having heard the stories after the fact, you know, like, you know, I busted a rib and, you know, complained about it for a year and used as an excuse to not pick up shopping bags. And these guys are playing the next week.
Yeah, I know.
It's just just insane. So, I mean,
2018 is the highlight.
It has to be. But there's, as I said, Matera taking those bounces down the wing in that grand final.
Any Derby Derby? Memories? Does that ever factor into it? Do you ever call Narrowly up and be and like give a shit after a particular derby derby?
I mean, there was the one where I think it was Kickett was just about to retire, and
was it which Kickett? One, Dale?
Yeah,
played for Fremantle. Derek played for Essendon and Sydney.
Right,
and Dale.
And I think he was just about to retire, and there was someone else who was just about to retire for the Eagles. I can't remember who it was. Anyway, they just went out knowing they couldn't get suspended, and I think it was called the Demolition
Derby.
Derby, as we say of it. Yeah,
Derby Derby.
I still can't say.
I don't know which one it is. What's the correct one?
Oh, I think it comes from Derby, which is, you know, the place and the phrase, you know,
is Derby,
colonial sort of forebears, but
Derby Derby.
In WA, we just run our own race.
Yeah.
It was just one guy, like the toughest guy at the bar, one day got it wrong.
Yeah, no one's going to.
No, it's fucking spelled Derby. It's Derby. And everyone's like, yeah, mate. It's Derby. Yeah, no, it's Derby. So forevermore, it's been Derby, west of Adelaide. So there's some crackers there. I think West Coast still, again, it's that big brother thing. It's the same with me and my big brother. You know, he's more talented than me, which is also a factor. But whenever we play basketball, it doesn't matter, like one-on-one, doesn't matter how much fitter I've been than him, or when I've been, you know, he hasn't been able to play for a while. I'll be up 11 points. He'll still be able to beat me. I think it's a similar thing with those guys. It's just, there's always going to be that.
You're just holding them by the head. They're swinging and you just got the hand resting
like
on the forehead.
Some kind of deep-seated childhood memory kicks in and you just panic.
Well, it's also that thing too about when you are the big dog in the yard, you don't have anything to fear. Like they're all the kind of pressure and all the chip on the shoulder comes from the person who's trying to knock you off.
Yeah.
But they hardly ever do it. Nah.
And I thought it would change like around that era, that 2013. I mean, God, Fremantle had such a good team.
Yeah, Ross Lyon.
Yeah. And like I think, it's interesting as to why that didn't sort of turn into a dynasty kind of team.
Well, some could argue that Ross Lyon is good at taking teams with an assembled list and then running them into finals.
Some would know that better than others, right?
Yeah. And then some would also say that what he's not very good at is sustaining that, like in terms of his overall view of recruiting. And I mean, I think that I love Ross Lyon and I was shattered when he left, but I think you do have to kind of look at his grand final record and go, well, was that ultra defensive style of play not conducive to winning flags? I mean, it worked for Sydney back in 2005, but that was like, you know, maybe that was the exception. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And with that particular list, God, it was good.
Yeah, and Pavlich too. It'll have like, I mean, yeah. Nat Fyfe and Pavlich in the same side. But I was at that grand final, and the same one that you were at, and it was like they were completely, I mean, they've come up against a rampant Hawthorn, but yeah, they didn't look completely overawed.
Yeah, they were just rattled, weren't they? I mean, crazy how much they kind of stayed in it. That was the thing about that grand final. It felt like, well, they were, somehow they managed to stay in it, but they just couldn't take any of those chances. But yeah, just from there, they didn't. I don't know. I really thought they might be a similar team to Hawthorn, actually. I mean,
it's interesting when you think about it too, that, like, you know, we're sort of witnessing another dynasty at the moment with the Tigers. The Eagles have managed to just sneak in there and just steal one just right in the middle, just right in the middle of another team's dynasty. It's crazy.
Oh, the kind of baby bombers sort of did with us, I think, in the 93, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, just got away with one.
Yeah, I really wasn't expecting 2018 to happen at all. And I think we lost the first game to Sydney, and we had some injuries early on in the year, so I'd kind of just written it off.
Are there many, this might sound like a strange question, but have you had many low points as an Eagles supporter? Like, is there a grand final loss, or is there a finals loss, or is it something more off field?
It was like, I mean, there's just a sort of huge, the loss to, there's been a couple of home final losses, which again, we just take it for granted that the Eagles are going to win a home final. Mm. So the last couple of years where we've, you know, last year and then against the Bulldogs when they won the flag, you know, we're just kind of losing those two home finals.
Yeah, that
was. I mean, there was a game against Essendon. I vividly remember as a kid where we kicked a goal, like one goal, 12 or something in the wet, and lost by 100 points.
Oh, mate, come talk to us and kill the spot. I've got like 100 of those.
Yeah, the lowest of the. I mean, then that's what you're saying, I think, is that they're pretty few. I mean, one, we've had the wooden spoon once.
Well, I wonder if you, like, if there was some metric where you could measure, like, a supporter's happiness, if the Eagles would sort of be, like, I imagine Hawthorn supporters would be right at the top, you know, like pretty much a flag every 3 years. They haven't had a lot to complain about in the last 50 years. But I imagine the Eagles and Geelong, Swans maybe would be up there in recent years.
Yeah, but again, because of that relative success, I do wonder when that fine day comes, Charlie, and it will come.
Where you
when
shit.
Those Saints come marching in.
Oh, my God.
Like, the level, I mean, it's all relative, right? Like, the levels of, like, you may not survive it.
I don't think I will. I think I'd have a heart attack. I can't even, look, to be honest, I can't even conceive of what it might be like. And, you know, I've had a couple of guests on this show who have been very generous in their wish for St Kilda to win a flag, you know, especially like Richmond supporters.
Verging on patronising.
Very patronising.
Being now,
it's something I just can't conceive of, because it's like saying, you know, I hope one day to see you walking on the moon. It's like, well, I know it's possible, but it's
been done.
But I've seen other people do it, but it just, it feels like an unrealistic ambition for me. I mean, like,
you know, laws of physics don't not allow it.
I mean, the guy I do Two Guys, One Cup with, like, the whole point of doing this show was because we were going to commiserate about our teams being so unsuccessful.
Was it the next year?
The very first year, like the show's called Two Guys, One Cup, as in our teams have one cup each. And then the whole premise is torpedoed.
Yeah.
But watching Will go through that was quite informative. I think that might be similar, because the Bulldogs haven't even played in a grand final in Will's lifetime. It wasn't that they just hadn't won one. They hadn't even played in a grand final. So in Will's lifetime, he's one for one. We're seeing one grand final for one victory. But now to see where they've gone after that, you know, they didn't even make the finals the next year. You know, he sort of said to me that it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter where they've been in the last 4 years, because he's still got that, you know, and that will sustain him. Yeah. He feels like for the first 40 years, you know, that was a slog, but then he got one bite of the cherry, and that's going to sustain him for quite a number of years. He can deal with some success and disappointments.
Memory. Yeah.
So
to count from eight.
I mean, I feel like, you know, when you can live with being poor if you've never tasted riches. And so here I am scratching around in the dirt in the footy wilderness.
Any win becomes a...
Well, I get annoyed. I get annoyed when St Kilda supporters talk up like a finals win or a home and away win, because I'm like, God, guys, you sound pathetic.
Yeah.
You sound really
then
pathetic.
Then again, it's how Richmond sounded, wasn't it? You know, like those sort of early Hardwick years.
I mean, earlier in this podcast, I did talk about the time we beat the Eagles. And we're
right
celebrating like a final.
Yeah, which would have been fine if you didn't have the iPad showing me footage of it at the same time. No, it is. We are kind of spoiled. You know, we are very spoiled for that success. But it didn't stop me being pretty elated in 2018. Like, I think, you know, that is the thing you do. Because they've been every 12 years since 94.
Right.
So it's like long enough to kind of go, oh yeah, these are not regular occurrences, but regular enough to really have those hits along in your life.
To value them. It's actually almost the perfect amount of time for you to be like, oh, I'm really going to appreciate this. I'm not going to be like a Hawthorn supporter. It's like, which is my favorite premiership? Which is my favorite one?
Yeah. And usually they come in those chunks of
three
time.
In a row.
And, you know, our first two did, and we should have won, you know, 91 probably, but it's kind of a perfect interval of appreciation of premierships, but also not too long that you kind of get disenchanted with the whole thing. So I certainly can't complain from that perspective. But yeah, 2018 is the year like my son was being born, and they were actually a group of people that I respected and liked. Was a pretty special
finally
one.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
so you know, I doubt there's any danger of this ever happening, but just a question I ask everyone because I'm interested to know the answer. If the Eagles were to fold for whatever reason, the Eagles were no more, do you think you would pick up another team and just run with that, or do you think you would just become more of a kind of impartial observer of the AFL, or would you walk away from the game altogether?
I did like when GWS came in, I did, just because they're kind of they were the closest to where I was living. And I, you know, a lot of my friends who moved over from Perth to Sydney jumped ship from West Coast to Sydney really early on.
Right.
And I hung on, and I always thought that was a contentious decision. But I did like GWS. And this is the most contentious thing I'm sure I'll say that will really put me in the bad books with a lot of Eagles fans. But because when my sister moved to Perth, every year, I think me and my brother would just get a membership. So we'd end up going to the games with her every week.
So Freo games. Yeah.
And so weirdly, it was a Stockholm. I blame Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah.
Weirdly, strange. Just being in that space and watching them sort of struggle and be crap for so long. I'm not one of those Eagles fans where that there is that mad hatred. And weirdly, again, this is a very, I feel like I'm coming out, you know, the football club
exclusive here.
Yeah, this is a tough thing to say, guys. So I hope you really have mercy on me as a West Coast fan. But not only do I not hate them, I think because of those years kind of there with my sister and watching and sort of willing them to, you know, to be successful for her as we were having these kind of wins. I'm not sure. I might even consider it. But look, that's a dark hypothetical you're throwing at me. And it will, you know, given the no matter where West Coast have been, the financial and membership strength has always been, you know, pretty good. So it'll take a dark and apocalyptic turn of events, which we almost faced.
Well, I was going to say,
which could happen any year. So.
It's not a sci-fi concept or anything like that.
Exactly. So when WA does secede and form and the waffle becomes the national competition again, it'll be when it breaks up. I'll go back to Subiaco. You know, that was my team growing up. And you know, I think I played 3 Colts games for them before I got delisted. So that's my alma mater. But I do, and the Bulldogs, I do have a lot of affection for the Bulldogs, and I you know, I do claim to be like a good luck charm in the 2016.
Why is that?
Grand final, I was there.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, it was because of you.
It was because of me. Also, I was playing a character on TV who was a mad Doggies supporter whose father had played for them. So weirdly, you know, because of the hardworking method actor I am, got very involved in Bulldogs history. We went and shot some stuff at the ground, you know, and I just love the great working classness of that as a club.
That was one of the most enjoyable things about that victory, was seeing what it meant to the west of Melbourne.
Yeah. And it's just the opposite of what West Coast has been. This is kind of corporate, like you're saying, totally. You know, the Empire. You know, they're the Rebel Alliance.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like it's, you know, it's
ragtag bunch of misfits.
Yeah, that's right.
The scrappy little battlers that got it together.
But the Jedi tricks of Bontempelli and Giannis. So look, I'd maintain, you know, the non hatred for Freo, but I'd probably jump to either the Doggies or GWS.
Interesting.
Interesting.
All right, let's finish up with one final thing, which is predictions for 2021. And you can be honest, you can be deluded. I don't mind. What do you think is going to happen with the Eagles next year?
Well, I still feel like the best list we've ever had was this year gone by, but whether that turns into you know, feeling like Moneyball or a team that actually kind of gels together. I mean, I'd say we're as good a chance as any. I think they'd be pretty disappointed with...
What's a pass mark? What's a fail mark?
Well, I don't know. With Tim Kelly added to the kind of 2018 list, you know, without losing too many players, you'd have to... I think anything... They'll be disappointed with anything less than a premiership, like realistically, right, okay. I would say.
Oh my God, I mean, this is talking to a person with high standards. I would never venture out to say anything less than a premiership is disappointing.
This is the kind of stuff we think when we're in Western Australia.
That's amazing.
Mate. This is the secret. This is blind, arrogant faith, and just settling for no less. Look, top four, they'd have to expect, but I think don't you reckon with Tim Kelly added to that list they would be disappointed if they weren't in here?
I mean, look, final. I think they're as good as any side to make top four, but I'm just staggered that anyone would come on and say anything less than a premiership.
Well,
would be a favorite.
You can't fault me for lack of confidence. Lack of confidence in other, like, because that's, I can play literally no part in that, but then take all credit as a fan. I mean, look, Richmond, I can't see Richmond losing for that. Having just said that, how did Richmond kind of lose with that list? I mean, they were kind of just like running on, you know, they were just kind of idling along, weren't they, for half of this year? And they were like, you still had the vibe that they've got this, no matter what it was, pandemic or, you know, middle of the list. I mean, I thought Collingwood would challenge for the next 5 years, but that's just been
very strange trade period.
Odd choices.
Bizarre how things can turn around.
If you were
going to
pick
years.
Where they'll finish this year, where would you? What's your prediction for Collingwood?
For Collingwood for next year?
For 2021.
2021. Look, here's the thing. If I was going on all evidence, I'd say, well, there's a real chance they might not even play finals because they've been trending, you know, from the grand final, they've finished lower and lower every year. But as we spoke about earlier, the culture of the club, they've been smashed in the media. Their president has announced his retirement. I wouldn't be surprised if they win the flag. Backs against the wall. That's part
right.
of their
that
psychology.
Kind of mentality. Yeah. I mean, that I would think that too, if it wasn't that the issue was that it feels like those players had not been, because those players had such an issue with how they've been communicated with, like, I'd just be really interested to see how that affects kind of everyone's sense of where they're at.
Safety.
And whether them as a playing group really come together as a result. And like you say, do, you know.
Well, the amazing thing was the way that the players were thrown under the bus for the whole Trelaw thing. That was the bizarre, of all the terrible communication that was going on with the players, but also to the media, is the fact that, you know, Nathan Buckley would come out and say that he'd lost the faith of the senior players. And then the senior players come and say, hang on, we don't remember having that discussion. He's a friend of ours. Like, just bizarre. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens. It'll either galvanize them or I think it, you know, it's gonna be a real disruptive
force. Era.
Yeah. Well, thank God. It's about time. Ian, thanks so much.
Thanks, mate. You heard it here first. West Coast Premiers 2021.
We are two guys, one car.